From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunat Sheesh, Hawa Toexik Nusam, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, it's National Breastfeeding Month, and we have experts from Search, Bartlett Beginnings, and the Juno Family Birth Center to share about awareness and how you can support moms. Juno Community Gardens Harvest Fair is filled with exhibits, farmers markets, kids' games, and more. We'll get all the details on this annual event happening this Saturday. And we'll have part one of a special conversation hosted by renowned and James Beard winning chef Patty Hinnich, who talks with Chef Hala Holotalks host Tasha Elizarde, along with Ames Villanueva Alf and Melvin Cristobal, about Filipino culture and food here in Juno. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Two announcements before we get to our first interview today. Tonight, there is a free event. It's a stalking awareness and prevention training. It's all in coordination with Perseverance Theater's opening production of Cold Case by Kathy Tognock-Rexford. It's happening tonight at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. It's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. and it's facilitated by Jenny Brown. Learn how to protect yourself and the communities you serve. As well as tonight, you can join KTOO's interim Managing Editor, Adeline Baxter, for this month's KTOO office hours at the Downtown Library from 6 to 7 p.m. Stop by to learn about the newsroom, share feedback, or ask questions about our coverage, or just to say hi. That's tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. at the Downtown Library. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On August 6, 2011, the U.S. Breastfeeding Committee declared August as National Breastfeeding Month. This year's theme is Nourish, Sustain, and Thrive. It's all in service of protecting, promoting, and supporting lactation. And right here in Juno, three local organizations have partnered to bring awareness and resources together for local residents. They recently hosted a lactation resource fair to help connect families with those resources. And today, we have individuals from each organization to share more. And joining me via Zoom is Jessica Lee. She's a health education and lactation consultant at Search. Sarah Gress is a registered nurse with Bartlett Beginnings. And Maddie Grimes is a midwife with the Juno Family Birth Center. Gunath Sheesh, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all joining me today. Wasa Iti, how's it going?
Going well. Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. Yeah. It's really nice. So first of all, I was looking through the U.S. Breastfeeding Committee's web pages, right? And it's clear that there are many global, national, cultural and social observances around breastfeeding. And I wanted to just start with, where does the U.S. and or Alaska specifically sort of land on the cultural ideas and impacts around breastfeeding? Mm-hmm. Who wants to take that one?
I'm happy.
I can go. Oh, yeah, go for it, Maddie.
Okay, great. I was going to say, I think that, you know, really where the U.S. and Alaska in a lot of ways kind of stands when we look at the cultural impacts of breastfeeding is in that reclamation phase, right? We're still kind of in that, like, acknowledging the harm that has been done to some of the first people who were here, you know, especially minority groups, Black slaves who were brought to this country, you know, our indigenous ancestors that first held kind of the stewardship of this land. And so there's a lot of really cool work that's being done across the country and in our state to really acknowledge all of those folks who have been repressed in their lactation journeys. So, you know, we've got Black Breastfeeding Week that's part of kind of the whole month of August that's really trying to help support those communities of Black folks who have been really limited in their access and resources to lactation historically, and some of the harm that's been done, as well as Indigenous Milk Makers Week, Milk Week, something along those lines, that's kind of doing the same work for those Indigenous folks who really like didn't have the support systems and structures in place for them to acknowledge their cultural heritage and the benefits of milk making in their communities. So it's a really cool time to be supporting these communities. For sure.
Yeah. And Sarah, is there some... I know there are, but let's just see if we can unpack a few of them. But are there some misconceptions or myths about breastfeeding that in this work that you all are doing are trying to sort of break down?
Yeah, I would say we probably all run into myths. I think what I tend to focus on a lot in the prenatal education that we offer is... getting at, like, people have a very large awareness of breastfeeding being healthy, right? We all have this cultural awareness of it being good for babies and good for mothers to some extent, but I don't always find that people have facts or data behind that, you know? So one of the things that I enjoy in classes with people and conversations with people is really kind of giving some teeth to those concepts of it being good. So when we're talking about, for example, benefits to baby, you know, talking about immune benefit, right? So one of the things that people tend to be the most fascinated by is not only is milk changing throughout the day in response to a baby's need, but as they get older, it's changing in terms of its composition. And particularly when we're talking about antibodies, whatever maybe baby has been exposed to or mom has been exposed to, when baby comes in contact with mom, mom's body does this amazing work of making totally targeted antibodies to whatever they've been exposed to and providing this very targeted immune benefit to anything that they happen to have been around recently, but also anything mom's carrying an antibody history for in terms of her immunizations or personal history. So that is a very cool piece that people are usually like blown away by. And when we talk about, I think we talk a lot about baby benefit, which is rightly so, right? That's, we're talking about the nourishment of infants, but when we're talking about benefits to mothers, I get really excited in talking to people about the reduced risk for cancer, particularly breast cancer. I think it often shocks people to know that if they can breastfeed for even just one cumulative year, it doesn't have to be one child, but if they have multiple children and altogether their experience is 1 year, they have a 28% risk reduction in the experience of breast cancer, you know, for the chances of breast cancer. So really powerful, not only in the health implications for infants, but for parents as well.
I see. Okay.
So I don't know if that necessarily addresses myths, but I think sometimes there's, you know, this concept of really putting some meat behind the motivation.
I like that. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I do want to ask you, Sarah, in your Bartlett Beginnings, is that a specific program at Bartlett. Just tell us a little bit about Bartlett Beginnings.
Yeah, really, it's the name for the obstetrics unit at the hospital. So we are, when people are coming to have a baby in the hospital setting, we're the unit for that. And then that department also houses all of our prenatal education and a large array of support groups that happen for folks afterwards. So part of our breastfeeding support is pre-birth education that is all accessed for free. And then in the hospital setting, we have actually 5 lactation consultants on staff with us who provide inpatient and outpatient services to families while they're either delivering with us, or if they've delivered out in the community, they certainly come in for outpatient support as well. And then we run a weekly new parent support group. And that's open to all parents, whether they're breastfeeding or not. But I do wear the lactation consultant hat in that group and can certainly serve as a, you know, community resource on a weekly basis for folks in that setting as well.
I love that. And Jessica, you are a health education and lactation consultant at Surge. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing and how this partnership sort of developed between all of these organizations?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So I work for Search WIC, which is the Women, Infants, and Children's Program. We're in very close proximity, so I think that is a benefit to us working together, and we intersect with the same kind of participants or clients or patients. And so, and we also have good working relationships. We talk amongst each other and meet throughout the year. So some of the work that I do there is WIC is kind of set up where it has a continuum of care support for breastfeeding moms, or the breastfeeding the mother baby dyad, and it from nutrition services, which is, you know, we provide for prenatal moms, pregnant moms, prenatal, postpartum, and nursing mothers, and then as well as peer counseling. It's kind of like that mother-to-mother just support system for moms who are breastfeeding. And then if there's more complex issues, I'm the lactation consultant for the program. So things, I also am part of that team that helps kind of address more complex lactation issues. And so, yeah, we really just try to build like this continuum of care from hospital or birthing experience through the postpartum phase, and then all the way up until the child is weaned, or if they're not breastfeeding, which we also support moms who don't breastfeed, because it's not, you know, everyone doesn't choose to, up to children that are 5 years old. So it's just really a continuum of care for young children and mothers. But specifically, my field is in lactation to support that effort.
I love that. And Maddie, I wanted to ask you, as a midwife, I know that parents, prospective parents and parents-to-be, they take birthing classes, right? And there's many different methods that people go through, and people heard of Lamaze, they might know the Bradley method or different ones that have been around. But are there specific things that parents-to-be would want to be doing before birth in terms of learning about breastfeeding?
Yeah, I think, you know, something that can be really beneficial as far as kind of pre-birth preparation for lactation, you know, some of it is talking about like what your experience has been with your breasts and if your breasts have changed throughout pregnancy, you know, so talking to somebody who does lactation work, sometimes that can kind of help clue in if there are going to be concerns about milk production or anatomy that could be worked on before there's a problem in some regards. So just talking to somebody about kind of those breast changes. And I think having the opportunity to attend classes, kind of wherever you attend classes and get that education, but just to understand what's going to be normal for your production, how your breasts are going to be lactating in the prenatal period versus the postpartum period after baby is born, and what to expect with normal feeding patterns for babies, and setting realistic expectations can be really beneficial for smoothing the waters that first week or two of life. And then there's also some really, really great benefit of stimulating the breast tissue prior to birth. So starting in, usually we recommend here the term window, so starting around 37 weeks, and doing either some casual breast massage or even some stimulation with a pump to try to kind of encourage the colostrum flow and just kind of help with the end stage mammary tissue development. So that has been, you know, shown to be pretty beneficial for how much milk somebody can make in those first days after baby's born, and how long it can take for the kind of earlier milk the colostrum to transition into a more full volume mature milk a few days after baby is born. You know, so just kind of talking with your healthcare provider or one of these wonderful lactation resources about, you know, how you can loop that into your care schedule in the prenatal period can kind of set you up for a smoother experience after baby is born too.
And I know that there's, you know, as someone gets pregnant, they have a certain they take some vitamins, they do different things. But are there dietary guidelines around breastfeeding specifically that things, and when would that start? Like, do you want to do that during the whole pregnancy? Or, you know, is there certain things that are going to be better even like maybe post baby? Like, what kind of foods would be good to eat that will, you know, help nourish that child, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, calories are really like the first and foremost thing. You know, there are food groups that after a child is born that can be shown to potentially increase milk production. But for many folks, just really nourishing that postpartum person to ensure that they're getting hydration and adequate calories in every day is going to be the biggest thing to help with that production. There are supplements that some folks can take the last couple weeks of pregnancy and more that are available in the postpartum after baby's born that are safer at that time that can help with tissue development and milk production. But really, most of the time, support, space, and nourishment is going to be kind of the three key components to helping somebody's early lactation journey to get off on the right foot.
I love that. Okay. And Jessica, are there some other, and we talked a few, I think Sarah mentioned a few at the beginning, but are there some other barriers to having a successful outcome in terms of breastfeeding that we should make people aware of?
Oh, that's a really good question. There are a lot of barriers out there. I think it's pretty individualistic, whether it's your network of support that's around you, if you're going back to work and your employer supports the lactation effort at work with pumping accommodations. You know, it really just varies from person to person. And that's kind of some of our work, is that we can help kind of support a mom, even prenatally, to kind of set her up for success so those barriers don't come into play as forcefully as, you know, a lot of times they do. I think the whole nursing aspect between a mother and a baby is so personal. And I think more than anything, if we can come alongside and just be an advocate for her in whatever area that she wants to be supported in, we can help address those barriers. There's many barriers, but I think it's very individualistic. I think one of the biggest barriers that we find in the lactation world is when moms go back to work, that their breastfeeding rates decline at around 3 months. That's pretty nationally known. Breastfeeding initiation rates are very high, but they start to dip at around 3 months of life. And a lot of times that's aligned with moms going back to work and not being able to pump at work and things like that. So there's a lot of laws that have been passed and, to help support that effort. That's probably one of the biggest barriers that I've noticed is the back to work.
Yeah.
Where moms they have a hard time doing both or being supported in their workplace.
Yeah. Okay. And I wanted to ask, as we round out the interview today, I know you just had the Lactation Resource Fair to help connect folks with some of those resources, but are there some that we might be able to give over the air, or is there a place where folks could go, or their websites or their contact phone numbers, or what kind of information do we want to get out to Juno here in terms of where people can go? And not only I'm also curious about this, because I think it's interesting. Like, we're talking about the moms or parents specifically, but what can others do, right? Obviously, you're talking about the workplace and, you know, making sure there's a room available or, you know, whatever that is to help out a new parent to be able to do that. But is there, some things that others might do, you know, like something simple I think about is don't stare at a nursing mom when she's in public, right? I mean, that's something simple that people can do. But I'm just thinking about other things like that, like what kind or how can others make themselves aware? You know what I mean? So let's start with resources for parents who are breastfeeding or are going to be. Like, where would they go?
I think each of our organizations. So easily people can go to the Bartlett website and pretty much directly under the birth center, which gets a little confusing, right, Maddie? under the tab that says birth center at Bartlett, there'll be information about all of our prenatal education, the lactation clinic, and our support groups afterwards. Or they can simply call the lactation clinic, which is 907-796-8975. And that connects them directly to our voicemail. And I will be probably the one to outreach them and talk to them about anything that I could connect them with. And then, Jessica, you want to talk about WIC?
WIC. So we cover all of Southeast Alaska. So you can just really kind of Google Alaska WIC or search WIC. On Hospital Drive there in Juneau. That's pretty much how we support. That's kind of our hub, the Juneau WIC program. And so people can go online. They can also call. And we pretty much, we're a small outfit. And so we answer phones, like, typically get an answer machine. If you do, we call you back pretty quickly because we really like to just support moms on a more personal level. You can always just look up Alaska WIC and then search WIC in Juneau.
Okay, that's
easily
great.
Found online.
And Maddie, any final words for other folks who might be supporting those who are breastfeeding?
Yeah, I think, really supporting, I think I talked about nourishment, right? Just nourishing and giving that breastfeeding person the space and the time to just be able to sit down and nurse. It takes a lot of time to feed a baby. And then, like you said, out in public, don't comment on it. It's like, don't comment on people's bodies. It's not polite. We don't do that now. We're better than that. It doesn't matter how old that baby is. It doesn't matter, how close that person is. Like, it's up to their comfort level. And then just think about, like, when politic things come up, when stuff comes up about paid leave for parents, like, support those initiatives. When stuff comes up about, like, supporting early access to, early childhood support and supporting WIC and making sure WIC gets the funding that they need to continue to do the work that they're doing, vote in the way that helps people have access to all of those resources. That's really kind of how we make change on a big scale.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it, Jessica, Sarah, Maddie, for coming on the show today and giving us some awareness during National Breastfeeding Month. And it's so funny because, yes, it's easy to Google these websites. As Jessica said, Google Alaska WIC or search WIC, search, spelled S-E-A-R-H-C, search WIC. Because it's so funny. Websites, they're always so complex. Like Bartlett's, you get down the trail of the website links and there's so many slashes and then it's hard to give that out over the air, right? So, but definitely it's easy to Google it and get these resources, or as I think Sarah gave a phone number, 796-8975 is a number to call. And it sounds like questions can be easily answered and callbacks are definitely part of that. So if you have any questions about that, if you're pregnant or you're about to be breastfeeding or you know someone who will be, this is the time to reach out. And if you're somebody who's supporting someone who is breastfeeding, take that in stride too and find out how you might be able to support that person, because it does, as Jessica said, it's a very personal relationship between those two folks who are involved in that relationship. And I think that's a really wonderful thing. So thank you so much for coming on the air, Gwyneth Cheesh, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Happy fall.
Yeah, happy fall. Here we go, rain. Okay, thank you so much. All right, up next, this weekend, Juneau Community Garden hosts the annual Harvest Fair. We'll get all the dirt next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. But first, here's a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. The next time you're in the kitchen, lend an ear. Your food has something to tell you. Think of the fizz and pop of browning butter which tell you that milk solids have fallen to the bottom of the pan and are now being toasted. When those nutty bits of protein, lactose, and minerals fall silent, they're saying, it's time to turn off the burner. Or what about the crackle of sourdough bread after it has emerged from the oven? As a loaf drops in temperature, the outermost layer contracts, causing the brittle surface to shatter. Lean in close for a bread baker's most coveted compliment. Congratulations, you have achieved the perfect crust. Fermenting cabbage produces a chorus of bubbles that sing of microbes converting glucose into lactic acid. Roasting carrots hiss from their baking sheet. Back off, moisture. I'm working on my caramelization here. Sometimes food speaks to us through the smoke detector, like roasting chilies that scream, I've got bold, smoky flavor. But in the case of that yam you poked too many times with a fork, it's more of a lament. My sugars are scorching. So the next time you roast a whole yam, poke just a time or two to ensure those natural sugars stay safely inside the yam. Bake at 400 degrees for about an hour until you hear a contented sigh coming from inside the oven. I am sweet, says the yam. I'm tender. Douse me with brown butter, honey, and soy sauce, and you've got dinner. Find the full recipe for sighing yams with brown butter at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gardens, good veggies, herbs, flowers, and more are on tap for this Saturday's annual harvest fair from Juno Community Garden. It's happening from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and you can read a schedule and find out more at junocommunitygarden.org/harvest-festival. However, here to help us unpack and plant the seeds is Heather Brandon. And I apologize for all my bad puns.
They're great. I love it.
I'm going to Chisha Igidu. Thank you so much for coming in. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasiti, how's it going?
Good. I'm very well. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to talk about gardening and the Harvest Festival.
Of course. Yeah, that's so good. So just before we talk about the Harvest Fair, what is Juno Community Garden, just for folks who may not know?
Yeah, Juno Community Garden is a nonprofit organization, and we have a garden space out on Montana Creek Road. I believe it's about 4 acres, and individuals can have a plot, a garden plot, for $35, and it's just a great space to organic garden anything you like, vegetables, flowers, herbs, rhubarb, and you can learn about gardening from other people around you, neighbors. You can ask questions. There's a whole board that runs it, and they know all about gardening.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a community.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Now, this is put on by Juno Community Garden, but you don't have to be a member of that, or don't have to have a plot or be a member to even go to the festival or enter some of these cool things that are happening.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So the Harvest Fair is open. We do it every year and is open to the public. And we want the public to come and enjoy our community and celebrate our harvest with us and look at the gardens. There are garden tours. There's activities for kids. And there's an opportunity to buy organic produce that was grown by your neighbors.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so tell me a few of the things that specifically people might want to enter into.
Right. So we have kind of a, it's almost kind of like a fair exhibit type of thing where you can enter your prize vegetable or flower. If you grew a giant dahlia, you could enter it into the exhibit. So it, you don't have to be a community. You don't have to have a community garden plot. Okay. It can be any person in Juneau that has grown this themselves. And there are categories for children gardeners and adult gardeners.
Oh,
and
that's
there's
great.
All different. I brought my little booklet and there are all different entry divisions for vegetables. There's one for the largest and most unusual. And my favorite one is the produce sculpture. Oh. And that's a lot of fun. One year I saw someone had carved their zucchini into a breaching humpback whale. They made it look like it was breaching. And another one was like a person, but it was carrots and the legs were like crossed because carrots grow kind of wild. So that's really fun. And if you want to enter something, if you're a member of the community and you want to enter a flower or a vegetable, then you would bring that at 9 a.m. But if you just want to attend the fair, you would come at 11. That's when it opens to everybody.
Oh, okay. So that's more specific then.
Yeah.
So at 9 is if you're coming with something that you want to be judged, because there's a whole, you enter your exhibits and then the judging is happening during that morning time.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right. Yeah. So at 11, if you want to be the first one there, I would come, you know, at 10:55 and wait at the gate to open. And that's when you're going to get the best vegetables to buy. So a lot of community members in Juneau come out there to buy organic produce. It was grown locally and it's wonderful stuff. It's zucchini, lettuce, all different kinds of things for sale. And it goes really fast.
And if somebody wants to sell their organic vegetables or what they have, is that something they have to sign up in advance to do?
No, they could come at 9:30 and drop off any donations to the farmers market.
Okay.
And we're also selling food there, so they could drop off muffins that they've made, but all the community garden members contribute to that. So there should be plenty of baked goods and other food items for folks to enjoy throughout the whole harvest festival. And then it ends at 1:30.
Okay. Do you know how many people have plots out at the Juneau Community Garden?
I do. They sent me that information.
Yeah.
There are 168 plots plus 29 climbing beds. So I guess that doesn't perfectly translate into number of people, but
right,
it's about,
that's 200, a lot,
200. Yeah.
So 200 plots, maybe it's, and that actually might be more people because you could be sharing a plot with somebody. You could have a friend that you garden with or whatever it is you're project together. That's kind of really, that's really cool.
Totally. That's how I got into it. I shared a plot with a friend and then eventually he, you know, did his own thing and I got the whole plot to myself.
It's like roommates, right?
Yeah.
It's like you gotta find a new roommate. Yeah. Or you're like, you know what? I like living by myself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of fun. Okay. And then tell us a little bit about some of the other events that might be happening during the harvest fair. You mentioned there were some things for kids to do.
Yes. So I know for sure that they have, you know, kids like games set up. There's usually like a music circle, and so people can enjoy music and little kids love to dance. And one year, and I think they do it every year, they had this huge pile of hay and coins were tossed into the hay. And then all the kids were allowed to just like
jump
into the hay and sort it out and like look for coins. It was like a big treasure hunt. So I think they usually do that every year.
I guess it's better than throwing needles in the haystack.
No needle. You don't want any needles in the haystack, just coins. So they can make some money. And our garden all year round has toys for kids to play with. So like if I was gardening with my young children, there are little bulldozers and little gardening tools and stuff and an area for them to play.
That's so awesome. And I love that there's like entries and categories for children as well as adults, so that if you are, you know, a parent and you're gardening and you, you know, want to encourage your child, like even like, especially for like that one you talked about, the sculpted fruit, like giving a kid a project to figure out what would you make out of this, you know, apple, or what would you make out of these items? And can you combine sculpted stuff together, or is it usually, do you see it as like usually one vegetable or fruit that's in it?
I've seen some combined sculptures that are pretty creative. Yeah.
What's the weirdest sculpture you ever saw?
Oh, gosh. Oh,
is there one that comes to mind?
Like some, like a, you know, like a squash throwing up some slugs. I don't know. It is like really,
I'm imagining, because in my brain, I'm imagining like, you know, taking some kind of potato and turning it into, you know, a sculpture of Nicolas Cage or something like that.
Oh my gosh, like, please enter that. I would love to see that on Saturday.
You know, or some kind of handlebar mustache, or I don't know. It'd be really, you could have, there's a lot of creativity that can be involved. So even if you're not a gardener, you could still be involved. You could still say, you know what, I'm going to buy a potato. I'm an artist, or I have this idea for some kind of project to do with sculpted vegetables.
I think that it has to be grown by you.
Oh, it has. Oh, this is a good, is a good caveat.
I think,
then.
Everything you enter into the exhibits, including the sculpted vegetables or sculptures, have to be grown by you in Juneau.
Okay. In Juneau.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's kind of like our local version of a county fair.
I see. Yeah, okay. So that's a good hint for folks.
You could make, there's also a category for jams and jellies and pickles and relishes and flower arrangements, perennials, and harvest baskets. So a chutney. So you could do some other
Other things. It's basically anything that's grown.
Yeah. Right? And
sort
like,
of,
I guess
you grow here in Juneau.
And the jams and jellies, I guess you could go collect some blueberries.
Yeah, that's true.
And make the jam. I mean, you have to do that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's tomorrow. Or wait, it's Saturday. Sorry.
Two days from now. It's happening quick. And there are prizes, you said.
There are ribbons. Sure. Okay. And there are different divisions and classes, and they have different ribbons for winning each different level. I don't know. It's too complicated to go into on the radio, but I think those are the main prizes, and then there may be some additional prizes. I don't know all the details.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But it's basically, and it's a harvest fair, and it's been going on annually for a long time, right?
Yeah, I think this is our 30th one.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's
nice
amazing.
Round number.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It is amazing because I mean, it wasn't too long ago that the glacier covered that area.
Yeah.
Really? So,
That's wild. Well, Heather, really, I thank you for coming in and telling us all about it. It's the Juneau Community Gardens Annual Harvest Fair. It's this Saturday, August 24th. If you want to enter something, that starts in the morning, and that will be judged. So you want to get there at 9 o'clock to be able to get your entries in, and then that'll be judged. But it opens to the public. If you just want to go and enjoy the fair, there's going to be all kinds of things. There's food sales, and it looks like there's going to be soups and muffins and all kinds of stuff. Plus the farmer's market with Heather's tip of being first, because vegetables, the good ones, go fast.
Yes.
And you want to get there and do that. There's kids games, and there's all kinds of other things. And you can actually probably ask a bunch of the folks there if you're interested in gardening. You don't have a community garden plot. You can be like, well, how do I get one? And where do I sign up? And there's going to be all that information at the fair.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And you're also welcome to just wander around the garden and look at our beautiful plots and all the things that we're growing. That's fun.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to get a tour. Yeah. That's so great. And where is it? Can you give us the address?
Oh, the address. Yeah. Yes. It is 5669 Montana Creek Road.
Okay.
And you go out Mendenhall Loop Road and then turn onto Montana Creek Road. And it's just past the gun club.
Okay.
But if you get out there at 11, there'll be cars.
I'm sure you'll be following people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, you can find out more about the Harvest Festival, and you can go to JuneauCommunityGarden.org/harvest-festival. Now, I've heard it as Harvest Fair and Harvest Festival. What is it? What do you prefer? What is it called?
I asked that too, and they said, oh, whatever. We call it whatever, you know. So
whatever you want. What's on the front of the program?
I think it says Harvest Fair on the program, but I've been calling it Harvest Fest. Anyway, I think they're interchangeable.
Fast Festival Fair, go yeah. is what we're saying
go.
To do.
Do it. Yeah. Just go.
Heather, yeah. Gunnath Cheese for coming in and telling us all about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, we will have a good interview from Patty Hinnich. But first, here's a little bit of a Star Party.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Reject Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the moon. We have names for the full moon of each month. June's full moon is the strawberry moon. July's full moon is the buck moon. And the full moon of August is the sturgeon moon. Then we have names for the phases of the moon. We have the crescent moon, the first quarter moon, the gibbous moon, the new moon, the waxing moon, the waning moon. And then we have a name for when the moon is at its closest to the Earth. The orbit of the moon is not a circle, it's an ellipse. So the distance varies over time. And when the moon is full and also at its closest to the Earth, it's called a supermoon. And it can be 10% larger than a non-supermoon and also brighter. When we have two full moons in a month, that's called a blue moon for each full moon. That can happen twice a year. And then if we have a blue moon that's also at its closest approach to the Earth when full, we then have a super blue moon. Now, the moon is very important for constructing a calendar because of the cycle of its phases. And it's also very important for understanding the geometry of the solar system. When we have a lunar eclipse, the edge of the Earth's shadow is curved, and that proves that the Earth is a sphere. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This week, the award-winning chef Patty Hinnich was in Juno filming for an upcoming series on PBS. KTOO and chef Halo Halo Talk host Tasha Elizarde worked with the team to share some of the wonderful Filipino cuisine here in Juno. And they sat down along with Ames Villanueva Alf and Melvin Cristobal to talk about Filipino cuisine and culture. We'll soon post the entire interview via the Juno Afternoon podcast, but here is a portion of the conversation. And for more on Patty, you can visit pattyhinnich.com. Here's a little bit of that interview.
Well, hello, Juno. This is Patty Hinnich, and Boston gave me the microphone for the day. Boston didn't know what he was getting into, but he seems to be acting very Mexican, and last minute decided to hand it off to me. So, hello, I want to say to my guests as well. Oh my gosh, radio is so much fun.
Yes, I agree.
I'm so thrilled to be with you here today. I'm loving my visit to Alaska. It's my first time in Alaska, my first time in Juno. And I have to say, we've been eating incredible Filipino food. I come from Mexico, where we have a lot of Filipino influence, but it's not in the surface as acknowledged. You know, in Mexico, we have this like mestizo culture that has kind of swallowed everything into one. So I'd love to, well, first of all, please introduce yourselves. Hello, I'm Patty. And tell me your name, what you do, and then we'll jump into a conversation. But just for people to know, this is going to be food, fun, culture. Boston is already regretting it. Let's do it.
He looks really excited about this, working on the levels for us. But thank you so much for being here, Patty. My name is Tasha Elizarde. For KTOO listeners, you may have heard my voice before on the radio, and that is because I'm the community engagement producer with the KTOO newsroom. I also run a media collective called MANA, or MANA Alaska. We are a group of Filipino storytellers around the state that works to reclaim and share the stories of Filipinos around the state.
Hi, welcome in, Patty. Thanks, Boston, for having us. I'm Ames Villanueva. I divorced two restaurants. You might have known them as Gonzo and Black Moon. And right now, currently in the depths of where I'm at with my life, I've been continuing doing holistic nutrition, mostly with oncology, and have transferred my energy into somatic work, as well as being a death doula and a grief guide. So we're going to change the narrative of grief and death and bring food to it.
That sounds incredible. I have so many questions already for the two of you, and we haven't even gotten to you.
I know. What's up? My name's Melvin. I'm, I guess, your local Juno Filipino baker, as they would say. Just here showing my perspective of how we got into the whole food realm and being Filipino, and just showing Juno what we got.
Amazing. Okay. So my first question to you all, and you can jump in as you feel like it. What does it mean to you to be a Filipino in Alaska? And what does it mean to you to be Alaskan?
Y'all want to go first?
I'll go. All right.
Let's go, Ames. Let's do it.
Well, first off, it's like, I feel like Alaska is the last place a lot of people think about when they think of the United States. And anytime I have told anybody in any of the kitchens, like, oh yeah, I'm from Alaska, they're like, is that part of the United States? And it's like, yes, yes, it is. But being a Filipina chef in a kitchen that is very male dominated, and being an Alaskan, and also like coming from my roots of my parents, who, my dad is in the Coast Guard, my mom was an RN nurse, that's very basic, right? Mm-hmm. As like a Filipino to transfer from the island to here. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how sacred that was growing up. And I always felt like, as I've gotten older, especially with how culture is and heritage is right now, we're getting into like this bigger depth of like seeing just like the generational ancestral gifts, mm-hmm. and the traumas. Mm-hmm. So I see that a lot, and I like to uphold the heritage that is getting so lost in our culture. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit tough being in Alaska, not just like food wise, but mm-hmm. mostly like food wise. So it's been really interesting coming from down south and doing everything from farm to table, and then coming up here and having to get like really dependent on Costco.
Plus, and just the foraging. Did you ever do any of the foraging with
mushrooms?
Yeah.
We did a lot of chanterelles. We do a lot of berries. And that's something where it's like, how do I incorporate these things that are happening right now that aren't just burgers and fries, that are like easy big sellers? Mm-hmm. And in the restaurants that I've had here, that's been it's very different there. Mm-hmm. Because the menu, I would consistently change it, mm-hmm. just to like mess with people. And also, though, to bring in the aspects of like, why is there no places that have like smoked fish or like a bunch of king salmon? Like, why don't we have things like that?
There seem to be so many layers to your identity. So your parents came from the Philippines?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So you have the fresh Filipino thing, which I think my kids have. I'm a Mexican immigrant. My kids were born Mexican in the United States. But there's something about that limbo of being the one who came,
right?
Which you have so fresh from your parents. So right. You have that. So you have the Filipino. But then, as you were saying, you have the Alaskan. And you're not the only one. And all the people telling you is Alaska part of the U.S. Yeah. The only ones, which seem to be so many. Me, as a Mexican, I've always thought of Alaska as its own independent country and nation. And I've had a hard time grasping how the 49th state has an entire country, you know. So you have the Filipino, you have the Alaskan, and the Alaskan in itself or by itself is very different from the lower 48. So how do you juggle all those things? And I don't only mean in food or restaurant, like in your daily life.
Well, it's really interesting because as you were speaking, it takes me back to like this way of the elders, right? And like the elders are so huge here in the Alaska Native Indigenous and also from where we're from. So as you're speaking, what I think about was growing up with my grandma and my aunt and my grandpa in the same household in Alaska and like seeing that dynamic and then going down south. Like I was in Portland and Pittsburgh for a while and it just felt like everything was detached. The way people were with their culture, the way people were with their food, there was something there where I was like, what's missing? What makes it different? So when I came back to Alaska and we were back together, that was that missing thread that I just was so oblivious to.
That's fascinating. And I want to ask you so many questions and I want to get to know you, but I want to know, is that the reason why you decided to become a death doula? Is that something from our universe in our life that is missing that sacred connection and meaning?
Oh my gosh, Patty, how long do you have? Like, how long are you going to be here? The short answer is, growing up, my first impactful death happened when I was 9. And this is like another generational, like cultural thing. But even though, like in the Philippines, when we went to go visit, everyone's having lunch in the graveyards with the departed. And then in Mexico,
that's so Mexican. You know, everybody's being very Mexican.
Right. And everyone's being super Mexican. But then 9-year-old Ames, no one could hold my grief. And so that really messed with me through my entire everything. And then when I finally figured out like, okay, Ames, you're going to get food and you're going to get grief and you're going to talk about death and you're going to open it in a way that is palatable. And so that's what I've been working on. I've been working on this series of that, but that's what opened it up. And currently one of my clients is my own brother.
That must be so incredibly intense, but it must help you cope too with being closer to death.
Bring
you closer to life, right?
Exactly. We learn so many things from the dying and death in general and grief. And so just to hold that space, like, thank you for those questions.
Of course, of course. Please.
Growing up, I've lived in
Tell us your name.
Oh, my name's Melvin. Growing up, though, I've lived in Juneau, Alaska my whole life. So I kind of, and being Filipino here in this community, we have a huge community of Filipinos here. And then so I didn't really think anything different growing up. I just knew I was Filipino. I knew who everyone was. Like when I go to the store, I say, hi, auntie, hi, uncle. You know, it was very tight knit. But then when I go down south and I see other Filipinos or like other cultures, it's a little different for me because I was like, oh, you guys, isn't that your aunt or something? And they say on the store and like, oh no, I don't know them. I was like, oh, this is totally different. Like, they're not my aunts, but I say hi to them in the store here. You just know everyone here in Juneau. So it's very different because like, you're like, oh, you're Filipino. I was like, oh, I just thought we're all here.
Connected.
Yeah, exactly.
So being in Alaska, somehow so removed from everything else, has made your Filipino community that much more tight.
Well, for me, just because like there's a Filipino community hall here. And then growing up, I would go there all like for Filipino parties, holidays and all that stuff. And then just building the community from the young age already. I'm just like, oh, this is who I am. This is I know. And then growing up too, I can also say I didn't really like Filipino food. So now at my prime age of growing up now, I'm like remaking everything, trying to make it to my palate. And I'm just like, oh, this is good. I like this. So now I came back from the Philippines 3 months ago. Like I was in the Philippines for 3 months.
Was that your first time?
It wasn't my first time, but it was my first time for a long time.
When was the last time you went to the Philippines again?
Like in middle school, something like that. Sis. But yeah, it was just different because so I was accustomed to like, oh, this is what pancit is in Alaska or like in America. And then going there to the Philippines, I was like, oh, this is different.
Wait, so how was it different?
It was just like, texture wise too. Mm-hmm. And then some regions too, they like it either more wet, more dry.
Yeah.
It's just different because I'm just like, I'm not used to this, but it was really refreshing to see like, oh wow, okay. Like there's more to what I know.
So there's like all these layers again. So mm-hmm. you have the Filipinos back in the Philippines mm-hmm. and you've been there many times. Yeah. So it's how being Filipino is expressed there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then how being Filipino is expressed here in Juneau and Alaska mm-hmm. and how Filipino is expressed in the lower 48.
Like I remember talking to my cousin too in the Philippines. I was like, cuz you're Filipino. And I was like, cuz I don't think I'm Filipino.
What are you? That was my next question.
Yeah, I was like, I was telling her, I'm more like, I feel like I'm American Filipino because like what you guys are going through is totally different from like my regular day life. Like,
but just, then sorry to interrupt, you said it's very different from the Filipinos in the 48. So it sounds to me like you're Alaskan Filipino.
That's another thing too. Because I would go down south too and I see other Filipinos like, oh, hey, mabuhay. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Like we're also from different regions. I'm sorry. But like, yeah, our families are from different regions too, because people forget the Philippines is a collection of islands. And the only reason why we are the Philippines, like one country, is because of colonization. And so like my family comes from northern Philippines, whereas like Mel, you come from Aklan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and then Ames, I don't actually know if you're
and more in the north. So like Baguio and Solano. Mm.
Are you Ilocano also?
Yeah.
So that was my next question, Tasha. Like you've worked on this project called Mana, which is collecting the stories or the oral history of Filipinos in Alaska. Mm-hmm. What are you getting? And I want to get back to you, Alaskan Filipino food.
Yeah. We're getting a lot. Actually, I think one of the biggest things that we do with this Medio Collective is we connect with so many community members around the state who have just not had their stories been told and not have had their stories been told by other people who are like them, you know, other Filipinos that are from Alaska. They know this experience, and really the root of our desire to tell these stories is to connect with, you know, our elders and our community members. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of different things that we've found. I might need a second to think on that, though, because there's just so much.
Let me jump in really quick, because my parents were actually involved in it.
Yeah, and his parents were actually one of the first people that we had interviewed. And first off, they're fantastic because both your dad and mom are hilarious. And then also something that we had learned, like, when I pulled up to your guys' house, the first thing that was said to me was by your dad. And he was like, hey, you're Lope's daughter, right? And so it had turned out that actually our families are super connected. Later on, when I was doing archiving work, like photographing, mm-hmm. I don't think I told you this, but when I went over to photograph some of y'all's family's old photos, I actually saw a picture of me as a kid at your daughter's first birthday. And I was like, wait, what? I don't remember this, but it was part of because our families were just so tight and I didn't know this and we didn't reconnect again until we did this interview. So it was just this crazy moment.
That is wild. And the other facet in that too, that I thought was like, whoa, this is huge, was legacy. Like my mom is very soft spoken. Mm-hmm. My dad is like a class clown. So he was always down to talk. And my mom was like, my story's not important. Mm. And that part like killed a part of my soul. Cause I was like, are you serious? I'm part of your story. Like what? Mm-hmm. Like I'm part of your story. Mm-hmm. And so when they ended up filming, it was a whole different layer of just like healing generational trauma, ancestral trauma, and talking about that.
More of that interview soon on Juneau Afternoon. You can find it at kto.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gunath Cheesh, and have a joyous Juneau evening.